Hello, and welcome to the Podcast of Steel. Here, I share news, reviews, my adventures, interviews, and more. You can always expect some Superman content from this show, but I'm a lover of all things geeky, so you never know what you're going to get. Now, let's leap into action with a brand new episode of the Podcast of Steel.
Hello, and welcome back to Luke Up, my podcast series dedicated to James Gunn's Superman film. And today, I am honored to be speaking with Mr. Handsome himself, Trevor Newlin. Sir, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Luke. It's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate it.
Now, I've got dozens of questions to ask you today, and I'm so grateful for your time. Over the last week, I'm sure you've been very busy, because for the past few weeks when this film has been in cinemas, people have been talking about everything to do with this film. And one of the things that I was so curious about was about Mr. Handsome and the fact of why did James Gunn have a picture frame on his desk with you in it. We will get to that eventually. But first, if you could please share your origin story with the listeners and watchers, Trevor.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Texas. I grew up in a theater background and I wanted to do voiceover. Voiceover was my main goal for the industry. So I moved to LA, went to film school, got a job in radio. COVID kind of changed that job and I found my way, after meeting Doug Jones, into doing creature stuff. So yeah, I met Legacy, to give you the quick, you know, the elevator speech spiel. I met Legacy FX on Mandalorian doing background. I was in a Wookiee suit. From there, a couple years later, I get a phone call. They have a national commercial for Amazon, which was a Yeti that went national and international. And after that, I did Romulus. On Romulus, I met Alec Gillis, who did Smile 2, and then Legacy connected with me again and we did Superman.
You know, it's a bit of a whirlwind career for you. As you say, you started off with this fantastic voice. You've got this voice that is just perfect for podcasts and voiceover. And now you're playing these wonderfully visual characters as well. You've got the whole deal going on for yourself, Trevor.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Yeah, I it's funny because I always said I would find more enjoyment out of voicing a character and not seeing myself on screen, like if that were the case. And so it's kind of funny that I'm doing that just in a different light. So I am seeing myself on screen, but not exactly. So it's kind of what I was going for in the first place, just in a different world, a different more rubbery, you know, foam latex world.
It's still creative. It's still a form of acting. It's a big form.
Yeah.
And we will get to that later on because in a way that you're doing so much more in that suit, which, will, as I say, we will get to. But let's talk about those other suits before we get to Mr. Handsome. Let's talk about that, Trevor.
Yeah, I mean, the first suit I ever wore was the Wookiee suit for Star Wars. That was a suit that was flown in from, I believe it was not used on Solo. So it was a very basic suit. It was one of the background Wookiees, so it wasn't, there was no animatronics, nothing like that. And then from there, I did the Yeti, which was a full servo head. So, you know, your classic, you know, mouth moves, all those type of things. And then that was a prosthetic glued on my face. So that was my first time in a real suit. And the thing for me is I thought, because I'm a very tall, lanky fellow, I was like, I'll never be able to do those big creature roles because those are, you know, those are big. But what I found out is actually the shops like when you're thinner because they can build up on you. So for the Yeti, all they have to do is put me in a muscle suit and voila, you know, I look like I'm 200, 300 pounds, right? And I'm built and everything like that. Yeah, and then from that, the Xenomorph was also, you know, probably not the heaviest thing I've worn. That was definitely the monstrosity from Smile 2. That thing was crazy heavy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Xeno head probably weighed about 11 to 12 pounds. And every suit, every head has a different challenges and different things just to get used to. But I will say Mr. Handsome is the easiest thing I've worn in my career, easily. Because it was just a, you know, if you've seen Shape of Water with Doug Jones, yeah. So it's that type of suit. So it's a very skin tight bodysuit. And then the head is just pretty much, you know, my head, just a little bit. I don't have a giant, you know, cranium on top, but that's pretty much how the head was. The only thing about the Mr. Handsome head is I couldn't see a thing most of the time. So it was just, you know, I was living in a little cave pretty much whenever they would use the hero head, as they call it, because there's two heads. There's the hero head with the one I can't see out that looks the best for camera so that, you know, VFX doesn't have to go in and clean too much up. Then there was the second head, which you see in a couple pictures I posted, where it's got that little grate over it and it has little pinholes and I can kind of see through because I did a lot more walking in the film than what made it in the final cut. So yeah, I had to have a head to be able to move around and grab things and pick things up and things like that. So but yeah, I mean, that's kind of the rundown of the suits. Definitely, if I had to rank them of heaviest, it's Smile 2 Monstrosity, then Xeno, than Yeti, than Mr. Handsome. Mr. Handsome was, like I said, the easiest thing to wear. It was the most my body of anything that I've worn. So
it's the one that's most screen accurate.
Yeah, exactly.
When you were in that xenomorph suit, that part of the alien world, the legacy that is that iconic series, you say your vision is quite impaired. When you first saw images of yourself in that suit, how did you feel?
I mean, it's an honor, right? You think there's probably 6 or 7 people in this world that have ever worn that suit, you know? And when I did the job, before I even got the job, or before I even got onto the job and doing the work, I was, you know, researching Bedejo from the first Alien film, Tom Woodruff Jr. from, you know, AVP and all those. You've got Goran from Covenant, right? You got Carl Troop from Aliens. So I was... And then Fede really loved video games, and he loved Alien Isolation. That was a big influence for Romulus. So I'm looking at Stompy's movements, the nickname of... I don't know if you're a gamer at all, but...
I'm aware of the games. Now, I adore watching people play games. I'm not the best at playing games. So watching the Alien Games walkthroughs has been some fantastic fun. Major jump scares, though, in that game.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But yeah, so I actually recently just finished a full playthrough of the game, which was... Whew, that was crazy. But yeah, so I watched a lot of, you know, behind the scenes of how they made the AI work, how they made Stompy walk and move, because I wanted to, of course, I'm going to bring my own movement because my own body is going to do different things than, you know, Tom's or Bedejo's or Goran or Carl or, you know, or Stompy for that matter, right? But I also wanted to bring what made the Xeno scary, you know, what captivated audiences when Bedejo stepped on screen for the first time in that suit. You know, I watched his screen test and just the way that his body could move and how he kind of just, because he is what created the xenomorph to make the xenomorph what the xenomorph is today, right? And it's the only credit he ever got in his life. He passed away at a very young age, actually, because he was a graphic designer and he was from Africa originally. So, but yeah, only credit he ever got, and he was discovered, you know, I think he was in a bar, and I think Ridley saw him, and they're like, hey, you'd be great for this. And so I have the utmost respect for any suit actor that's out there, and because I know what they go through and what we do to create and bring these characters to life that people and fans just love so much. So I'm, to put a button on all that, I'm just incredibly honored, and to see myself in the Xeno suit was one of the coolest. I mean, people always ask me like, what creature do you want to be? And I'm like, I don't know if anything can top the Xenomorph, right? It's the Xenomorph. So it's one of the most, as you said,
it's iconic. It's that suit that just, you see a silhouette of it. You hear the sound of those claws scraping across the floor. Mm-hmm. You know it's coming. So I can't imagine what was going in your head the first time you were in that suit and mimicking, but also making your own movements and making it your own. It must have been just incredible.
Yeah, and I, you know, because I went in early to Legacy, because they Legacy Effects did that as well as, you know, Superman and a lot of other films. But just trying it on and the first time seeing the footage of me moving, it's like, okay, because I was trying to, you know, also... When you put something on your body, when you're not used to it, you have to get used to just that being living in that skin, right? In a way, that's what you're doing. Watching my first test fitting to what became on film was like, wow, that's insane, that's crazy. But yeah, super cool experience, and just an honor to wear one of the most iconic suits in cinema histories.
Well, you did well. You've done everybody justice, the filmmakers, people that have come before, the future of Alien, because we know that franchise isn't going anywhere. No. And you're a part of that world now. So talking about some of the fantastic people that have brought costumes to life, you mentioned the fantastic Doug Jones there. And, you know, to be able to even have a conversation with that man must have been amazing for you. But what's it like, you know, having Doug almost as a mentor for you?
Yeah, I mean, like I kind of said, I never planned to get into this world that I work in now. It was kind of an accident, which I kind of feel like that happens a lot in Hollywood, right? You kind of just, you're going one direction and all of a sudden, oh, this door opens up, which I'm forever grateful, and I love what I do. I mean, if this was my career, if this became just what my career was, I wouldn't be upset in the least amount, right? Because I love what I do. But it's been really cool to just grow a friendship with Doug, because, you know, at first, the first time I met him, I believe he was coming off of Shape of Water that had just won Best Picture at the Oscars. So he was on the Oscar stage, you know, not too long ago with Del Toro. And that was crazy for me because I was just getting out of school at that point in time. But yeah, now at this point, it's been really cool because he's given me so much great advice. And now he's just somebody I can call up and, you know, ask questions or He's there. He's a really good friend to me now, which is just a really, really cool thing to be able to have somebody that has so much success and has such an incredible career to be so down to earth and so humble to take the time back when I had nothing under my belt to sit down with me for 3 hours and just not even talk about just the industry, but want to know about, like, you know, where did I grow up? What was my life? That meant so, so, so much to me. And the fact that our friendship has grown and has gotten stronger and deeper is just a really, really cool thing. And I'm forever grateful that, you know, he took the time, because in reality, he and one of my teachers I always shout out every interview I do. I shout out Phil Kaufman, because he was a teacher at the school film school I went to that was like, oh, you have a similar build to Doug Jones. So he's kind of the one that started everything of me going in this direction. And, you know, I did Halloween Horror Nights, which is your classic pop out scares, met makeup artists there, started going to conventions to just get my face out there and started modeling for people. And like I said, I met Legacy through doing background acting. And 3 years later, I get a phone call that in a way changed my career and changed my life. I said this in interviews too, but when they called me about Alien, it was all the bosses in their boardroom. And Shane, who's one of the heads of Legacy, he goes, this is one of those calls that might change things for you, is what he told me. And I just remember there's so many emotions that just hit you at that point. Cause it's like, wait a minute, like this is real.
This is it.
So yeah, I mean, I'm forever grateful to Doug and everybody else that's just been so supportive and been in my corner and still is in my corner to this point. But yeah, no, Doug is incredible, and I'm forever grateful to him.
Has he given you any feedback about Mr. Handsome?
So he hasn't. It's hilarious. I was going to text him yesterday because I was like, so many people think he is the one in the suit. I don't know if you've seen any of the comments, but they're like, I thought it was Doug Jones. I thought it was Doug Jones, which to me is like the biggest compliment I could possibly receive ever. He was going to go see it. I talked to him I talked to him after opening weekend, and he was going to stay out of opening weekend just because it was super, super busy. But I need to text him and see if he's gone and seen it at this point. But I'm sure he probably has at this point, but he's also, you know, he's a very busy person. He's got conventions. He's working a lot, which is really cool about Doug now is that most of his stuff he's doing is face roles.
Yes.
And he's an incredible actor first and foremost, but to be able now that he's at a point in his career where he can just kind of do whatever he wants to do is a really cool thing. But yeah, I'll have to check in with him and see if he's seen it, but I know,
please do.
I know he would love the character because I've shown him pictures of Mr. Handsome, of course. So
I'm glad. I mean, what I've heard, I mean, he's been to conventions around the world, and I've only heard just fantastic things about his time with fans and the love that he's got for all the separate fandoms that he's been a part of. And I see that in your future as well, Trevor. And I can't wait to meet you at a con one day, whether it be in America or here over in England, because the clear love that you have for performing, but also the magic of cinema and real props is just a wonderful thing. And I'm so excited to talk more about that. But the time now has come to talk about the fantastic Mr. Handsome. Now, I'm not sure if you've had one of these yet. I know you've probably got lots of pictures of yourself on set, Trevor, but I had to get this made. I needed my own Mr. Handsome in a frame.
So good. I love it.
Now, I love seeing this film, and I've seen it 7 times now. And I keep spotting new things.
We're tied.
The first thing I saw was this on Lex Luthor's desk. And I was like, I need to know more about that. And James Gunn has been quite secretive so far. But now, as you said, you had that message quite recently where the world really found out about who you were when James Gunn did that fantastic post. So please tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, like I was telling you before we started recording, I was asleep. And I had sent that photo the day before over to Gunn, and I woke up from a text from my ex-roommate, and he was like, hey, today's the day James Gunn posted you. And I was like, huh? And then I scrolled down through the notifications, and I saw James Gunn has tagged you in a post on Instagram. And I opened the post, and I was like, well, he actually tagged me. Like, he actually put my handle on there, which was, first off, the sweetest thing. Like, he didn't have to do that. I truly appreciate that. But it was just, yeah, it blew my mind. And then my phone for that rest of the day just wasn't working very great because there's so many notifications coming in. But just so many sweet people and so many sweet words just towards the character and towards me. I was just like, man, it's so cool because when James created this character, he wanted to have a character that just, you know, was a character that you don't really know much about, but it definitely grabs you because he doesn't look like anything else in the film. He's just kind of there. I'll tell you a story that I haven't told anybody else yet. It hasn't been on an interview, but
wow, thank you.
Yeah, we were wrapping up one day on set, and James was walking by the tent I was in while Legacy was getting me out of my stuff, and he said, "Oh, great job at it, Legacy." I said, "Oh, thank you so much." And he popped in the tent and he looked at me and he pointed at me. He said, "You too, man. You're amazing. You're gonna be known worldwide. You're gonna be as big as Groot." And then he walked out. And I instantly went to my phone when I got it and just wrote that down on my phone as a note, because I was like, that's wow. Because I know how much he loves Groot. And
yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's been so cool because we did so many fun things on that set, and just like, I don't know. I knew that he loved the character. I definitely knew that. And everybody loved Mr. Handsome. Like it was insane just to be able to be that character and be a part of a film that, you know, like you said, is incredible and so heartfelt and doing so well, and for everybody involved and for David and Nick and Rachel. And it's so incredible to be a part of something that has so much hope and light. And yeah, I'm just grateful. I'm grateful. But yeah, to go back to the post, it was one of those things. I was like, wow. And then, you know, all the media outlets grabbed it and ran with it. And I'm just like, wait a minute, that's me. Like, they're posting about me. Like, I'm a gamer. So IGN posted about me. And I'm like, I've followed IGN for years. Like, I play video games. And it's like, wait a minute, IGN is posting about me. That's crazy. But no, it was just, it was a wild day. It was so, so cool, and I'm so grateful that James, like I said, tagged me in it and said so many sweet things about the character, because I know how much he and everybody else loved Mr. Handsome. So
to say that, though, you're going to be as big as Groot. Maybe, who knows, he might have plans for you for a Superman sequel. There's been talk of that online for the past few days now. I think whenever James Gunn mentions anything about his projects, mm-hmm. you know, websites jump on that and try and reach for every single possible leading quote that they can find. But to have faith in your representation of the character, to say you're going to be as big as Groot, is huge.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Let's go back to not necessarily Mr. Handsome's origin story, because we don't know that as much. Mm-hmm. He's explained that, you know, Lex Luthor made him when he was 12, mm-hmm. and he could be the only character that he has sentiment for. And I love that, because there's been so many different variations of Lex over the years. Mm. But I love Lex being this super genius when being a child. I love that idea of a character. And hopefully we might be able to see more of that in the future. But let's talk about the origin of you as Mr. Handsome. How mm-hmm. did that really begin for you, Trevor?
In what regard? Like, in what way?
Well, when you found out that you were going to be Mr. Handsome.
Oh, okay. You mean the actual, like, okay,
yes,
the whole
yes,
thing.
Yes,
okay,
gotcha. Your origin of the character.
Yeah. yeah, it was kind of similar to Alien. I was at a convention and I ran into one of the individuals from Legacy, and they were like, "Oh, we're putting you up for Superman." And I was like, well, "Okay, that's a cool thing to drop on me. That's really cool." And it was during strikes, so it was kind of one of those things like not much was going on. So it was more of those like kind of a big waiting game. So it's like you get that information. It's like, "We're putting you up for Superman." I'm like, "That's really cool." But I've learned in this industry, you know, don't get your hopes up, because that's just the reality of how it works. And then, you know, a couple months go by, the strikes end, I get phone calls, and I'm on my way to Atlanta, right? I mean, they'd already started, because Legacy has all my stuff from Alien. So they were, you know, they were already sculpting. Savannah Sunderman sculpted Mr. Handsome. Shout out to her, because yes, it's an incredible sculpt. Actually, there's some influence from the Offspring, from Romulus and Mr. Handsome, for sure.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that's it, because she also sculpted the Offspring for Alien Romulus. Super incredibly talented artist. But yeah, and then from there, it was just, you know, fly to Atlanta, and I was out there for 3 weeks working with Nick, David, Anthony, and James. That's kind of how it happened. There was no audition process. It was more so Legacy's worked with James, you know, Guardians, Avengers, all those type of things, right? So they kind of have a lot of casting power, and they were like, "We have this perfect character that, you know, that would fit you greatly." And they sent it to them. They said yes, and that's kind of it.
So let's talk about you getting into that suit for the first time. How did you sort of prepare yourself for that moment?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, like I said, it was super comfortable. It was more so just to step in, get in, and put the head on. But the biggest thing with Mr. Handsome is the fact that, you know, he is an original character in the DCU. So it's like I'm creating a character from scratch, right? Mm. Besides what James has told me. So it's like, okay, How does he move? How does he interact? What is, you know, I had to think about all those things, right? Because he doesn't exist. Like, what does he want, really, right? What does he actually want? Because a lot of it is still shrouded in mystery for me as well, right? And so when I got out there, I kind of knew what the world knows now, maybe a few other things here and there, but in reality, I think that we, Legacy, James and I, were building the character as we went. Because every day there were new things that, you know, he would want to try or we would discover. Like, we had Nick and I did a dance off at one point in time.
Oh, wow.
That didn't make the final cut, which is super fun.
Oh, we need that.
No,
please, James. Let's get that happening.
Yeah. But no, it was super fun because James is fantastic at comedy, first and foremost, and so is Nick, and David is also funny, but, you know, he would throw little quips here and there, like, try this, and we were doing, you know, super silly stuff that, granted, watching the film now, it's like, okay, those certain things wouldn't make it in just because they wouldn't fit the mood of what we're going for here, but yeah, we did a lot of super fun things with the character, and I kind of saw the Groot-esque aspects because of some of the certain things that I was, you know, being directed to try and do. I like the dancing, right? Like, Groot dances. So there was just a lot of really fun, silly moments that happened that were just cool to be a part of and to have the whole cast laughing. And there is one when Malik gets shot. Yeah, spoiler alert, sorry.
Spoiler alert. I mean, come on, guys. The film has been out now for a few weeks.
Yeah. But they did a bunch of... You see it in the wide shot. I put my hands on my head like this. It's in the wide shot. But they did close-ups of each individual character. And there was a close-up from the front of me putting my hands on my head. And my mouth opens up and my eyes get really big. And we cut on that take. And all I hear is just everybody laughing. Like, David's inside the cube, right? Superman's inside the cube. And we cut. And he just starts dying laughing. He's like, that's the funniest thing I've seen so far. And you hear James on the over by Video Village just cackling so hard. And it's like, of course that didn't make the final cut because it just wouldn't have worked for the moment. It's a very, very serious moment, probably one of the most serious moments in the whole film.
It is. But I mean, the fact that in that moment you showed more empathy than Lex Luthor.
yeah, but
you,
no,
you showed more care. Wow.
Yeah, but we were all laughing very hard after that happened. Of course, I couldn't see anything because I had the hero head on, so I just, you know, I just reacted, and then all this stuff in the front happens, controlled by Diego at Legacy, you know, doing all the movement, and then I just hear everybody just dying laughing, and I'm like, oh man, I was like, I hope it makes it, but I was like, I already knew going off that day, I was like, that probably won't make the final cut because it just doesn't fit. But they did use the wide of me putting my hands on my head, so I was like, hey, it kind of made it.
It made it a bit. You know, and now all of us know as well, so that's even better about it.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned about you created this character along with James and the fact that, you know, James Gunn, we know, can create worlds. He's done that fantastically over the years. But for him to be able to create a character for the Superman universe, he has now got that moment in time. He has created something, and you have created something for that legacy. It's almost a century old now. Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster releasing that epic comic back in 1938. And I'm sure those two boys would be incredibly proud and amazed that that character is still being recognized and having his stories told. Mm-hmm. What's it like for you to be a part of Superman history now, Trevor?
I mean, I feel like it's kind of a similar question to what's it like being a part of Alien history. It's surreal, right? It's an honor. I think the biggest thing for me about the film is, for of everybody in the film, I'm most excited for David because, you know, meeting him out there and seeing how genuine and nice and kind he was, and, you know, knowing I can't even imagine how much pressure and stress stepping into a character as iconic as Superman, especially when we've had this, you know, going from Henry to David, and, you know, there was discourse and all this type of stuff. Same for James, right? Like the pressure on that side as well. But I'm so excited for David that, you know, people love his Superman and love him and see how genuine of a person he really is and how down to earth he is. The first day I was on set, when I was getting into the suit, it was my first day actually going to be filming with all the guys. David opened my tent and he's full Superman. He's like, "Hi, I'm David." And I was just like, "That's Superman." Because again, the internet hadn't seen the suit yet. I hadn't seen the suit yet. And it's just like, wow. And the fact that he took the time to come over to me, who's a much, much more minor character than he is by far, to introduce himself meant so much. And, you know, Nick did the same thing. Anthony did the same thing. So it was just, I'm so excited for David. And I think he's the perfect Superman for what James Gunn is doing with the franchise, right?
I believe so as well. But as you said, everybody's been so complimentary of each other on this set. And the people that I've managed to speak with so far, they've said that set life for them was such a wonderful and enjoyable time. Not only were they able to challenge themselves artistically, but they felt safe in the workplace. They had a great time. Everybody felt like family. Yeah. And I love that, because the positivity and hope that's coming out of this movie, I'm so happy that that happened behind the scenes as well. And that everybody that worked on this film has now got a deeper connection with the love of cinema and storytelling, but also for being there and being there in that moment. For you, though, I mean, it's going to be different for you seeing people in costume for the first time. That's going to be really exciting. For some of the others, it might be a little bit intimidating. So what were your sort of first encounters like with some of the other people that you worked on in the movie?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Nick, David, and Anthony were super inviting. I would talk to Nick pretty much every time I got on set. Every day we'd catch up, you know, hey, what'd you do last night? How was it? Like, how was the basketball game you went to? All these type of things when there was a weekend or whatever. But yeah, and then we would, David is a theater kid, right? So yes. we would play a lot of like memory games and theater games in between takes. I think Anthony brought dice one day and we played dice together. So they were all super, super welcoming to me, because compared to where I'm at in my career and what they've done, you know, these are incredibly established actors that have done a whole bunch of things and, you know, are the faces of now these iconic characters. And for them to invite me in and welcome me in to be a part of what they were doing, a part of their and theater, right? Like, it's like a theater family, right? It kind of felt like a little theater family, because when you do theater, you're with those same people over and over and over and over. In reality, the platform we were on was a stage. You know, we're performing on a stage, if you think about it, a moving stage.
Yes.
Because it did move around. So it was, they were all just super inviting to me and nice and kind, and they loved Mr. Handsome. And it is funny, because I know there's that interview of Nick saying that his son's favorite character is Mr. Handsome. And that threw me off, because when I was out there, I remember when Nick's son came to set and he said hi to David, but he never came up to me. So he saw me from afar, like I waved to him. But it's so funny that I left that impression on him, because I think he was a little scared to come up to me, because it is a kind of a creepy character, you know, I understand. But when I heard that interview, I was like, oh, that's really sweet, because I never got to really interact with him from a closer distance. Like, you know, Superman shows up, he's like, oh, Superman, and all that type of stuff. And then I'm over like, hi. I'm on the platform just waving, you know, with my
sad trombone. That's it, going off.
Yeah.
Stomping off.
But yeah, I thought that was so cool that ended up being his favorite character. I was like, oh, that's really, really cool, because I didn't know that. But
Not his dad, but actually Mr. Handsome, the character that he essentially made in a Petri dish. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Coming back to your time with theatre. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that helped you learn more about the physicality of how these suits work?
Yeah, I think so. I think every suit definitely has, like I said, its challenges and its learning curve, right? And with Mr. Handsome, like I said, there was no blueprint that existed beforehand. There was no thing to research or to look up or to bring to take and study, right? It was being created on the fly, right? So I would say, though, yeah, definitely I did a lot of movement classes in theater, and even in when I was in film school, I did a lot of movement and things like that. So I would say it definitely does help for sure, yeah. The theater world does for sure.
I love that. Now, a few more questions, because this could go on for hours. I've got so many questions.
Yeah,
for you,
no, you're fine.
This
I'm
is
chilling.
Fascinating for me. We've got that fantastic moment at the end of the film where Superman sits back in his special chair in his Fortress of Solitude, and he looks back on home footage of his family, his chosen family, Mar and Pa Kent. When Mr. Handsome sits down in that chair and looks back at his favorite footage, what do you think he's looking at between him and Lex Luthor? Are they skipping through fields? Are they having picnics together? What is that relationship like, Trevor?
Oh man, that is a great question. I feel like that's a, is as much as a cop-out answer, I feel like it's a, like I say, ask James in reality. I mean, I guess for me personally, it's just seeing a genius grow up I don't know. Like I because it's interesting because, you know, he grew me at 12 years old, right? It's like, was I fully grown right off the bat? Was I not? That's a great question, right? Was I already, you know, a giant towering over everybody, and he's going to school and he's just got me like hanging out with him, just sitting in a chair, just staring deadpan into a wall or staring through somebody, right? So I don't know. I think for Mr. Handsome, it's, I think it's happy moments with Lex, because at the end of the day, it is funny, right, about the photo being on the desk, because I remember when they told me that, because after I'd flown back home, they're like, oh yeah, Lex has a picture of you on his desk. And I was like, really? They're like, yeah, they're like, when we went into Lex's office, there was just a picture sitting on the desk. And I do love, yeah, of all the photos, it's not Eve, it's not anybody else, it's me. Only photo on his desk is me. But yeah, I would say, I don't know what exactly the images are a little fuzzy, but I would say it's all happy stuff. I would say that Lex does enjoy his time with being around me. I mean, the fact that that is the only thing that he really does care about in the film besides getting rid of Superman, right? I would say, yeah, I'd say it's happy moments. I can't truly see the images yet because I don't know if they're fully created, but I would say I think it's happy moments.
I hope to ask James Gunn that same question Monday as well, because I think the internet wants to know more now about that relationship. Just with that one little post that has blown up around the world, it's making people not only want to go and see this film and learn more, but also go back and watch it again and miss those things that they might have missed the first time round.
Yeah.
I'm still seeing things and spotting new things, so I can't wait for the DVDs and the Blu-rays to come out so we can hopefully some of those deleted scenes and outtake reels and dance-offs. I can't wait for that. But your time today has been, I really appreciate it. But before we go, could we talk a little bit about some of your favorite movie suits, if possible?
Yeah, of course.
So what for you is sort of the ultimate top five suits that have been in cinemas over the years?
I feel like, man, that's tough, because I want to put two in there that are not suits, because okay. there's two practical creations that I love that Stan Winston created: the T-Rex from Jurassic Park.
Wow. Okay.
The alien. Yes. Alien Queen. I think those two. It's funny, I watched Jurassic Park a couple nights ago actually again, and it's just like, man, the fact that that was real is insane. And then the Alien Queen, I think, is one of the most impressive creature designs and reveals in all of cinema. Suit-wise, though, man, that is tough. I mean, the Xenomorph has to be on there.
Of course.
Predator. I think Predator has to be on there. Man, they're just so...
There's been a lot. I mean, there's not been more than I would like there to be so much more, because I'm just so amazed with how far we have come when it comes to bodysuits and animatronics. I can remember being far too young and watching An American Werewolf in London.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that one. Absolutely.
So I think I was about 10 and it was on TV and I was watching it with my dad, and sort of I was up too late, came downstairs and it was on television. And that morphing scene, seeing the knuckles come out the bones.
The practical transformation, yeah.
That coming from sort of, you know, decades ago is fascinating and magical. Yep. And it did freak me out a little bit. I'm sure I had a few sleepless nights, but it still amazed me that back then, this was way before we have the CGI that we have today. Mm-hmm. It was just a magical way of telling stories that we still get today with the legacy effects. They're still making movie magic.
Oh, yeah.
And there have been, yes, we've had Godzilla suits. We've had lots of kaijus now in different films as well. But there's something about somebody being in a suit and bringing a character to life like you are doing. It makes that cinema experience more immersive for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I personally believe this, but no matter how incredible our technology gets, you will never be able to have a robot move like a human being, because we are living, breathing individuals, and that alone brings so much. There's no way to replicate our movement. There isn't. There never will be. I mean, what Legacy built is incredible, and I'm not saying I don't want it to get it twisted. I'm saying, you know, it's not. But at the end of the day, a human being in something or moving some way is just going to be so captivating to an audience, right? Because it's real. right? Like it is real. Like I remember seeing a lot of people saying that they thought Mr. Handsome was CGI or was an animatronic, right? And it's like, no, like that was real. I mean, again, another thing about with James Gunn too, with Superman, and I'm sure some of your other interviews have touched on this. I believe I heard it in one, but it's like a lot of everything that was shot was practical. Like the Fortress of Solitude was practical. Like the Daily Planet was practical. Lex's office was practical. The Pocket Universe, a good amount of it was practical. Like all those prison cells that you see when Superman gets put in, those were all real. The platform we rode on was practical. It moved. It turned. I could turn it. That was all practical. Some of the little pieces of the Pocket Universe were practical, right? Like practical effects do so much for not only for the film itself, but for audiences, but also it's in reality, it's great for marketing because when you release these images of things, it's like, oh, wait, that was real. Like it's such an impressive feat. And I appreciate that there's so many directors like James, like Fede, like Parker that still love practical because these people that build all of these things, I feel like a lot of times they're kind of forgotten about. Right. Like, yes, I am Mr. Handsome. But, you know, like I said, Savannah sculpted it. Scott Patton designed the head, like Diego, Tracy, Jamie, who were out there with me, Shane, who were out there with me helping puppeteer and move it around. Like, I can't do it by myself. Without them, I'm just a tall, lanky fellow standing on a platform. Right. With nothing attached to me. Same with being in Romulus. Same with being in Smile 2. It's like these people, I feel like, a lot of times don't get the credit they deserve because they create so many iconic things that people love, but they're kind of forgotten about on the side. I do love that these directors that do embrace and want to do practical stuff because they truly do care about these people and they want them to get their spot. Like I remember James posted about Number 4 that was built by Legacy, the completely practical. Diego, my buddy, he was telling me we went and saw the film in 4DX, which was insane, by the way, if you haven't done that yet. Absolutely crazy. Maybe kind of would sort of recommend it. It's wild. But the scene where 4 is reaching up and, you know, grabbing Superman and holding on, that iconic scene, he's puppeteering the arm to grab onto Superman there. Like, he's in that scene doing that. And it's like, people don't know that. People don't know these things.
Thank you, Diego. Thank you for that gut-wrenching scene.
Yeah. So it's like all these incredible moments. There's so many people that are not seen that are doing so much work to give you those gut-wrenching moments or the things that just connect with you. And I just want to shout them out because they deserve the credit because there's do so much work.
So many people made this film happen. And that's what this Luke Up podcast is about. I'm wanting to speak with every single person that worked on this film to make these characters come to life with such emotion and such power and passion. And it's been fantastic so far, speaking with everybody that I've spoken to, and there are so many more that are out there. And I'm grateful for all of them for their work. Now, we've already seen that James Gunn will be releasing a book about the film, which is going to have to end up in my collection. In many other film lovers' collections as well, because I think people want to know more about this film and understand more about these characters after seeing what it's done. This film is being studied by thousands around the world. Mm-hmm. But as you said, it's the people that worked behind the scenes that helped make this magic. And James Gunn seems to have this wonderful passion for each and every person behind the scenes.
Well, and that's the thing, too. That's what's really cool about James. And I've seen it with Fede and I've seen it with Parker. It's funny, but it kind of goes back to the very bottom. Like when you think about film school and you're working with people, you bring the same people back on to do more projects with you. Like, look at James. Like, look at his projects. Look at from Guardians. He brought people from the Marvel universe into the DC universe for Superman because he likes working with the same people. He has a little family. Fede is the same way. Parker is the same way. And it's really cool that I got to be invited into this family for Superman because I could see, like many people have told you already, but I could see that everybody that worked on that film wanted to be there. And that's a big thing because that's not always the case in Hollywood with filmmaking. It's not sometimes there is discourse and things like that. But on that set, James was just so positive and so fun to be around. And everybody seemed like they really, really enjoyed working, not just with him, but everybody else that was there. And, you know, I think that starts too with David and Nick, right? And Rachel, right? Your three main leads, right? Because he cast three people that truly are just super down to earth. I didn't get to meet Rachel, unfortunately, just because she wasn't there when we were shooting, but everything I've seen from her, she looks like an incredible person. You know, he cast three people that truly care about care about the work, but also care about the people. And when you have people that care about the work and care about the people, you get a film that comes out that's like Superman or like Alien or like Smile 2, because the people that worked on it truly cared about the work. And it sounds kind of corny, but it's like when you put the love into it, you're probably going to get the love out of it too.
Perfect. Maybe that's the real punk rock, Trevor.
There it is.
I was waiting for that moment. There it is. But it's the love for this film that has, it's made me so happy as a Superman fan to see new people out there putting on the Superman t-shirt, seeing old fans come back, and but more importantly, new fans to the franchise, fans that are going to be coming back year after year now, and having David as their first Superman, having Nick as their first Lex Luthor. It's a beautiful thing to see. And this isn't my first Superman rodeo, as it were, but to see the love for this character and the love for this film, it brings me and so many more people around the world hope for the future of DC Comics. Now, we had that fantastic Supergirl cameo at the end of the film. Again, spoiler alerts, people. If you haven't seen the film yet, what are you doing watching this podcast?
Yeah, it's been a good enough amount of time, I think, at this point.
But that book, the visuals in that book are going to be absolutely amazing to see that in a film. And the fact that we've seen a little bit of what James can do with world building and these, as you say, these physical sets like the Fortress, like the Pocket Universe. We're going to see some amazing characters in the future. And I hope, you know, you may come back for this one as well. Who knows?
I hope.
Mr. Handsome could have a cameo, or you know. Live with your first face shot, as it were, in a film as well like this could work for you.
Hey, that sounds great to me. I'm just, like I said, I'm grateful to be a part of such a film, like, of course, the Superman franchise, but to be a part of a Superman film that has so much positivity and hope and love, and also a film that everybody in my family and immediate world can go see because they're not going to be scared, is a great thing. It's great. I love being, because, you know, with Alien, it's like my parents went and saw it, of course, right?
Yes.
And some friends, but not everybody's going to go see Alien. Not everyone's going to go see Smile 2, but everybody can go see Superman. So I'm just forever grateful to James and Legacy Effects and everybody I got to meet and work with that, made it such an incredible experience. And yeah, hopefully Mr. Ham is either in prison or somewhere in Metropolis, maybe. I don't know. I have to ask
he's
James about
back.
That one.
Yes,
have
he has James. To come back, James. So you've shared that you've had some fantastic feedback from the people that have been in this film and helped made it. What's been the best feedback you've had from the people that know you in real life?
I don't know. It's just, I think the fact that the people are kind of just calling me like the next Doug Jones is insane. And if I could have been anywhere near a career of what Doug has had so far, I would be incredibly honored, right? Because he's played some iconic characters and is still working every single day of his life at this point in time. And the biggest thing is still so humble and down to earth and kind. Like, you know, you talked about his conventions. I've sat next to him at a signing and just watched him take the time with every single person and truly give them their time and not try to push them away or whatever. And just, it's like, I don't know how he does it, because that's so much, you know, emotional. I mean, he's a special person. He truly is. Like, Doug is the nicest, kindest person I've ever met in my life. I don't think I ever will meet anybody kinder or more loving than him. I just don't think it's possible, because he truly is that. And the thing is, how I know it is, everybody says the same thing. Everybody you talk to that has met Doug Jones or interacted with him says the exact same thing. And so, you know, if I'm able to be the next Doug Jones, that's incredible. But I just hope that I can have a career that puts out amazing work, working with amazing people, and just share my art is the biggest thing that I would love to do. But yeah, the whole thing about you're the next Doug Jones is a really just, it's the highest compliment I think I could receive in regards to what I'm doing. So I'm just gonna keep doing what I'm doing.
I'm glad, because your passion for what you do is, it's wonderful to witness on the screen and behind the screen. Talking with you and learning more about this would be fantastic. But I mean, a thought that's popped into my head, you know, Lex Luthor making these friends, as it were, many, many years ago. I'm sure he didn't succeed straight away. So maybe there could be some other versions where Doug Jones could perhaps cameo as a variant of Mr. Handsome. Maybe
Imagine.
Sir Handsome or Duke Handsome. Who knows?
True. Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
I'm sure he could be very regal with that role as well. That'd be fantastic, though. Man. Trevor, where can people find you online, sir, and what are you up to next?
Yeah, so very simple, very easy. Instagram is my main thing. It's my name, Trevor, with an underscore, N-E-W-L-I-N. That's, if you want to reach out, ask anything, that is my main social media, pretty much the only one I use. So it's very easy to get in contact with me. And I've got some things coming out. I, you know, can't say anything yet.
Of course.
You know, those NDAs are always fun. But yeah, there'll be some stuff soon. So I'm looking forward to it.
Wonderful. And I can't wait to see what comes next. And I really hope we see some more dancing of you on those deleted scenes and blooper reels.
I hope that makes the deleted scenes. I hope it does.
James, please, James. If
that
not,
would be so great.
You'll know they're going to be shown at the next staff party or rap party.
Funny because when they would also reset the platform a lot of the time, I was on there by myself and I would just start. I like to dance, so I would just start moving, you know, on the middle of the platform. And I'm sure they rolled on some of that at some point in time.
So I know James did create some playlists for some of the cast. Did he create a playlist for Mr. Handsome?
He did not that I'm aware
okay.
of.
Right. So here's your chance. What is on Mr. Handsome's playlist, Trevor?
God.
What's he dancing to when those cameras aren't rolling?
I feel like September is on there by Earth, Wind & Fire. I feel like he's got that on there.
Yes.
Man, I feel like he's kind of a little pop. I feel like he's a little like punk, pop punk type stuff. I don't know.
Okay.
It's tough because I want to just say what I would listen to, but that's not the same thing.
Well,
right?
That's fine. Let's get to know the man behind the mask. Mm. What is on Trevor's playlist?
Oh gosh. Well, a lot of hip hop actually, which nice. I don't think Mr. Handsome would listen to hip hop. I just don't see Mr. Handsome. I feel like Mr. Handsome and Groot would get along really well. They would.
Okay.
They'd be people of very few words with each other, because as you know, Groot just,
yes.
I am Groot. And Mr. Handsome, as we know, at this point, doesn't talk. So it'd be a very exciting conversation to witness between those two.
Anything comes from this conversation, I hope we see some fan art between Mr. Handsome and Groot.
Let's
come on, people. I know a few artists out there that I'm going to be DMing soon to make that happen for when this podcast goes live.
Yes, that'd be incredible. Oh my gosh, I'm sure James would love that too.
Yes, so I shall get that message out to the masses.
Sounds good. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like I feel like he listens to happy music though. I feel like it's not too much like, you know, not depressing, not sad, but it's more like it's upbeat, it's peppy. Maybe some of the stuff from Superman's playlist, maybe a little bit from Lex's playlist. Maybe he's just like a connoisseur. He just grabs, like, I would pick some things from Eve's playlist, you know, maybe a little Taylor Swift in there, maybe a little Shaking It Off, maybe perhaps for Mr. Handsome.
No, that's, I can't not see that now. I can't see Mr. Handsome dancing to Shake It Off. Okay, let's make that happen, James, in the next film.
Sounds good. But yeah, I think he just grabbed a little bit from everybody. I think, you know, Eve is the leader of the Mr. Handsome fan club, as she took all those selfies.
There was that one that she shared recently of you as well, where she was on your lap. That needs to be your go-to signing photograph. If you ever are at a con, that would be perfect.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember when we took those photos, and people don't know this, but I'm covered in slime most of the time. Like, Mr. Handsome is a very slimy fellow.
Did look quite wet.
Yeah, so when she sat down on me, she got up, she was done for the day. That was her only thing that day, and because she was just covered in slime, right? But, you know, we took a lot of fun photos, and I'm sure at some point James will release the selfies, or Sarah will release the selfies.
Please.
I hope so. I would love to see him like up close, because, you know, I'm sure you've seen at the end of the film with the when Jimmy has the board, there's a selfie of Mr. Handsome and Eve on there. And then also when Rachel is looking at the phone when Jimmy sends her the stuff, there's the selfie that her and
yes.
I took together. So
they're out there. They exist.
It was just really cool to see how much that James threw in Mr. Handsome, because I'm not in it very. I think I get some pretty good screen time for everything that we shot that has been mentioned made it into the film that I shot, which is incredible. First off, my first question I had was, did I make the cut when I had people seeing it already? They're like, yeah, you're in there. I was like, okay, good. That's great. I just wanted to make the cut. I'm so glad I made the cut. But I got everything that we shot that I'm aware of made it in. So I'm grateful for that, which is super, super cool. But yeah, it's just really cool that James really loved that character, and I got to bring him to life with the help of Legacy Effects. Just and like I said, to be attached to a film that's doing so well and is so well received and is really kind of uplifting a lot of people, that's a really cool thing, because I think as artists, what we want to do ultimately is just be a positive influence if we can, right? We want to and all the turmoil and things that are going on around the world and everything, it's artist's job to bring light to those issues, but also to uplift people and bring people together, because at the end of the day, that's what we need to do as human beings.
Perfectly put, perfectly put. Trevor, thank you so much for your time today. I hope this isn't the last time we speak, because this has been truly fascinating to learn more about this film, but to learn more about you and the magic that you brought to the Superman movie. So, Trevor, thank you so much for your time today, and I can't wait until we speak next time.
Thank you so much, Luke. I appreciate it. It's been a blast, and yeah, we'll see what the future holds.